Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Early in the coronavirus pandemic, testing for the COVID-19 illness was limited. Only people showing symptoms or traveling to the U.S. from certain regions of the world were likely to get the nasal swab, showing they were positive or negative. Months later, that's changed, and testing is widely available in Illinois. Now, sites throughout the state offer free testing to anyone, regardless of whether or not they have symptoms or have been in contact with someone known to have the virus. But testing negative for COVID-19 doesn't necessarily mean you can't pass the virus on to others or that you should go back to your pre-pandemic life. Here to help us understand more about COVID-19 testing and what it can and cannot tell us is Dr. Vidya Sundaresan. She's Program Director for the Infectious Diseases Fellowship Program and co-chief in the Division of Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Sundaresan, welcome back to the 21st.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So Illinois now has free testing open to anyone, regardless of whether or not they have symptoms or know someone who's tested positive. Is there a case for everyone getting tested now?
It is a good thing that we have testing that's widely available. It may not be a good idea for everybody to get tested. The reason for that is we are definitely needing tests to be done for, in some settings, more than once. In some settings, probably every 14 days, particularly in the congregate settings, etc. There's also tests that have been done for determining if it is safe for someone to return back to work. Testing is also useful in some settings where students, especially if it involves travel. So in situations like that, testing is definitely useful and widely available testing is helpful. But like you were mentioning earlier, this actually involves a little bit more than just having a positive or a negative test. It has to be interpreted correctly. And a negative test may not always mean that the virus is not present. There are so many reasons why we could get a false negative test, which involves the type of test that is done, the timing of the test, how the specimen was collected. So there are lots of things that have to be done correctly, and the test needs to be interpreted in a correct way.
Yeah, so the interpretation is key, I guess. Many people have been gathering at protests in Illinois in the past few weeks. Others maybe have been enjoying going to restaurants and eating outside, at least, as most of the state is in phase three. Let's say someone was out and worries that they might have been exposed. When is the ideal time to get tested?
That's a great question. So we have tried to see what the optimal timing for testing is. When is it that the virus concentrates maximally? So there's a good yield when the specimen is collected. These are tests where we're trying to go all the way to the back of the nose to get a good sample for testing. And if the virus is in high enough numbers, the chances that this test is positive are much higher. So anywhere from day 3 to day 7, the virus concentrates pretty highly in the back of the nose or the nasopharynx, as we refer to it. So that time frame is generally pretty good. CDC has also given recommendations for testing as well. Day 4 is what a lot of the information says is good. Day 4 after being in any mass gatherings, day 4 after that, the yield is most.
Is the testing process still involve that swab that I've heard people describe? It feels like their brain is being scraped way in the back of the of the nasal cavity there, or is it changed somewhat since then?
Unfortunately, not. The nasopharynx, which is swabbed, is still not a very comfortable test. So the swab, a flexible swab, is introduced through the nares and taken all the way to the back of the nose. And that's a comfortable feeling. And to actually improve the yield, that has to be twirled around for about 10 to 15 seconds to make sure that the virus is collected from the secretions there in the nasopharynx or the back of the nose. So that's one type of testing. We do have tests which are available from the nasal cavity. So just your nares or a nasal test. You don't have to go all the way to the back of the nose there to the nasopharynx. And those tests are also available. And we also have saliva tests. The problem with these tests, the false negative rates can be pretty high. So we know about the nasal test, and that, in fact, the false negative rates can be as high as about 15%. And the saliva tests, depending on the type of test, depending on what make it is, the sensitivity and the specificity can vary as well. So FDA has also approved home kits. And these can be saliva tests or just the nasal tests. And these don't necessarily have a lot of accuracy, and the safety is also of concern. So these are the tests that we have available. The nasopharynx, we used to collect specimens from an oropharynx route to where you could go straight from the mouth to the back of the throat. They are also accurate, but not as accurate as the nasopharyngeal tests. And then the nasal and the saliva tests are even less accurate.
Wow. So it sounds like, let's say you get your results back, you're negative for COVID-19, does that mean that you can go visit grandma that day or go back to work? Or do you want to maybe take a different approach?
So again, a negative test may not always mean negative for COVID. It depends on how the specimen was collected, what type of test was used. If the specimen was not corrected accurately, then the chances of false negatives increase. Also, the timing of the test. If somebody goes too soon after being exposed to get this test, we may not have enough virus in the back of the throat or any of the methods that are being used to be able to get a positive test. So this has to be taken in the context of when the exposure occurred, if somebody is asymptomatic, why is the test being done? Is it for return to work? You know, some of the other clinical features there too. Were there any symptoms in the past? 2 weeks ago, did this person have any symptoms? So a lot of questions that go along with getting a test. So a negative test may not always mean negative, and it may not always be safe to do what you're doing or what you were doing in the pre-COVID times without actually weighing all these possibilities.
And I think I've read that it's possible to test negative for the virus and not have any symptoms, but still spread the virus potentially to other people. Is that right?
Correct. So that's where, testing widely does help. So far, we have not really tested that many people who have been asymptomatic. So having that information is definitely useful from an epidemiological standpoint, where we are able to better estimate what the denominator is. We know now that about 50 to 60 or even higher a number of people with COVID can be asymptomatic. So it does definitely help us estimate that better. But there are also now, recent studies looking at what exactly are the possibilities. If somebody is asymptomatic, the risk of shedding virus and the risk of spreading it to somebody else, is that the same as somebody that is symptomatic? So we're looking into more of that information. So yes, asymptomatic people can shed the virus. About 50 to 60% of people with COVID may not have symptoms at all and still harbor the virus. But again, the implications of those, how likely are they to spread, et cetera, that the more information is coming out on that.
If you're just tuning in, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Dr. Vidya Sundaresan, who is Program Director in Infectious Diseases Fellowship Program and Co-Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield. And Dr. Sundaresan, let's say that you test positive for the virus, but you have no symptoms. I mean, is it possible you were exposed previously and recovered? I think there's some confusion about we've heard about these antibody tests and, you know, the tests that are more widely available. Can you talk a little bit about the difference there?
Absolutely. That's a great question. And I should have clarified a lot of what we were talking about earlier do refer to molecular tests or PCR tests, where we're looking directly at the viral particles. But there are also antibody tests available or serology tests available where, you know, we're looking at the response of the individual to the virus. The antibody tests are not yet widely available, and we're also looking to see how this can be best utilized. Studying to see how many people have the antibodies, how many people have immunity for COVID would be useful, but These antibody tests need to be very specific. They can be positive with exposure to any type of coronavirus, not just COVID-19. So it has to be very, very specific. So the way the test is constructed is very important there. We don't know how long people have immunity to COVID if they are exposed. And if these antibodies are tested, maybe about 6 weeks down or 2 months or 3 months, how long do these antibodies actually last and how long are they protective? And we don't know what is a protective titer. What exactly is the quantification on these? We know higher antibodies are good. They're more protective, but exactly what is the cutoff? Where exactly do we get protected? So all these answers we're still looking for and coming up with guidelines for antibody testing and how these can be best utilized. The antigen testing, which is what we're talking about, is widely available. And those are the types, the nasopharyngeal, the nasal specimen or saliva testing, oropharyngeal, and then these can also be done from bronchoscopy specimens.
Would you recommend that people be tested for the virus more than once, given what we were talking about earlier about the false negatives that come back?
If somebody is asymptomatic, then not necessarily. People have had more than one test. People have, in fact, had more than two tests. And this would be for somebody that's symptomatic and has had a negative test, but the suspicion for disease may be high and the timing may not have been optimal. The specimen collection methodology may not have been optimal and hence a negative test. So in situations like that, a repeat test would be useful. If somebody is asymptomatic, and again, the same principle applies, if there's a high risk for this individual, if they had contact with somebody that is positive for lab-confirmed COVID, in situations like that, if it's done really early, they had a negative test, do they need a repeat test again? So it really depends on the scenario and case-by-case basis where people may need more than one test. But it's not really necessary if somebody has a negative test to go back and get the test again because you don't believe the test or it may not have been accurate. In somebody that's asymptomatic, the chances of that happening is lower.
I wonder, what is the bottom line here? Who in Illinois right now should go get a test?
Somebody that has had a contact, a known contact with a COVID case, somebody that's in the healthcare setting and showing symptoms. And if there is a risk at all, they've been in mass gatherings, we're definitely recommending tests for anybody that's been in a gathering, a large gathering, and not having been socially distanced, not having worn masks. The risk may be higher in a situation like that. Although being outdoor versus indoor, the exposure, all those count as well. But definitely these situations, you want to get tested. But otherwise, if somebody has been asymptomatic at home, not that high of a risk factor, is prioritized lower.
You know, we've only got about a minute left in our conversation. In cases, the daily reported cases have come down statewide. I wonder if you're recommending that people take the same precautions they did before Illinois reached its peak, or at least its first peak, or do you think people can make some adjustments?
We have had a phased recovery process, which is great. Illinois is in the green, which shows that our numbers are not increasing. We're actually flattened or even going down. So we're in a good place now. Continuing to do what we are doing is essential. So we stay there till the recovery process is complete. So wearing masks, hand washing as much as possible, wiping down surfaces. If you're sick, stay home. Cover your sneezes. These are some of the things that we can continue to do. Socially distance, follow guidelines, recommendations that are in place right now. These public health measures do work. So we need to continue to do them till we have completely recovered.
Dr. Vidya Sundaresan is Program Director of the Infectious Disease Fellowship Program and the Co-Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at SIU Medicine in Springfield. Dr. Sundaresan, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today on the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
Coming up, a conversation about Antifa, short for anti-fascist, in the wake of the Trump administration's threat to designate Antifa as a terrorist organization. There have been false rumors of Antifa-led violence, some taking hold right here in small-town Illinois. We'll look at what Antifa is and what it isn't coming up after a break. If you want to join the conversation, our phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. The number again is 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us your comments and questions to @21stshow. That's @21stshow. And as ever, we'd love to hear your thoughts on what we talked about on the 21st. Send us an email, talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us.